This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Monday evening, November 18th, 1991, Rabbi A.H. Lappin.
Tomorrow and will peace be at all times. Now, I must confess to you, ladies and gentlemen, this evening, that I'm doing something of an experiment. And I want to explain to you what the experiment is. Amongst the numerous beautiful passages in the Chelvis HaLevavos, there is one particular passage in his Cheshbon HaNefesh, where he speaks about man, the necessity for a man always taking account of himself. And he says there, that when one studies the Torah, and it doesn't matter what part of the Torah it is, let us say when he's studying the Chumash, and when he's studying the Sedra, and when one does that, one should be able to approach it with a freshness. We all have our preconceived ideas, and when it comes to the Torah, when it comes to the studying of the Torah, it should be as if we are facing it for the very first time. And of course, whatever the Chelvis HaLevavos says is always based on the Torah. He wouldn't say anything unless there's a source of it in the Torah. And the source of that in the Torah is where the Torah says, these words which I command you today shall be upon your heart. But they're not today. These words were commanded 3,000 years ago. And the point that the Chazal make is that whenever one studies it, it should be as if it was given today, and today was the first time one was confronted with it. Today was the first time one heard it, and as one progresses and advances and matures, one always sees it from a new and a completely different and at the same time a very much deeper perspective. And that is really what I am doing with you tonight. I'm taking the Sedra of Vayetze. This is the Sedra which we have read, and it is really one subject. The whole of Ayesha is one subject, and that is the time that Yaakov spent with Lavan. And here you have two contrasts. On the one hand, you have Yaakov, who is a tzaddik, but no ordinary tzaddik. He becomes one of the pillars of the Torah. He is the chosen one. There's something very particular, very special about Yaakov Avinu. On the one hand you have him, and on the other hand you have Lavan. And Lavan is the arch rogue. And these are the two contrasts that you have, and from the very first moment, they are thrown in together and against one another. Now, what is so special about Yaakov is, Tite Erika Yaakov Chesed Avraham. We say that Hashem has really given Chesed to Avraham, and he has given Emes, he has given truth to Yaakov. And I want to just explain that briefly to you. One would have thought that it's not necessary to give Chesed to Avraham. That is what he has. One should rather have said Chesed to Yaakov and Emes to Avraham. But there is a very important idea that goes right through Torah, and that is that Hashem gives one only that which one has. If one has it, then Hashem gives it to one in a considerably greater degree. And it's based really on a verse in the book of Daniel where it says, God gives wisdom to the wise. And there is the Midrash, where the Midrash tells of a Roman matron who came to Rabbi Yosei and said to him, why does your God give wisdom to the wise? He should give wisdom to the foolish. It is they who need it. And Rabbi Yosei answered her and said, you are a very wealthy woman. Do you ever lend your money? She said, yes. He said, to whom would you rather lend your money? To a wealthy man or to a poor man? She thought for a moment and said, to a wealthy man. And he said that the poor man needs it more. She answered, yes, if I lend money, I want to be sure with it. He said, that's the same with the Almighty. He wants to be sure with it. He gives wisdom to the wise. They know how to keep it. They won't squander it. And so Hashem gives Chesed Lavrom. He is the one that understands what it means. And it is Emes, it is truth to Yaakov. Now here we have Yaakov, and pitted him against a rogue like Laban. And how does he deal with him? Laban deceives him, and Yaakov in turn also deceives Laban. Is there any justification for it? There's a passage in the Gemara, and it is based really on these words, where it says in the Torah of Yaakov, Vayagev Yaakov leRachel, ki achi avihu. Yaakov said to Rachel, to Rachel, that is when he first sees her, he says, I am the brother of your father. Now, he's not a brother of her father. And Rashi's got two interpretations. The one is a very easy one. He doesn't mean the brother of her father. He means a close relative of her father. And the second interpretation, and it's a Midrash, the second interpretation, he says, I am his brother in deception. And if he deceives, I am able to deceive too. Rochel doesn't leave it at there. And she says to him, Umishori lehu lesadike, lesagui beramunso, is it permitted for tzadiki, for righteous people, to engage in deception? He says he can hold his own against him in deception. Is that what is permitted? And it's Yaakov's answer with which we shall deal with him this year. Yaakov answers in. He says, yes, it is permitted. Shekach misnayeg HaKodesh Baruch Hu. That is the way Hashem conducts himself. Hashem conducts himself in novor titabor ve'im ikesh titapel ve'im ikesh titapol. That is, with the straightforward person, God deals straightforwardly, whereas with a crooked person, he deals in a perverse way. So Yaakov says to Rochel, that is the way God deals with people. With a righteous person, he deals in a righteous way. And with a perverse person, he deals in a perverse way. And we learn from God's ways. It says, V'holachto b'drochov, you shall walk in God's ways. He says, so I am entitled to deal with him in exactly the same way as he understands. And that is the very beginning already. He hasn't met Lovon yet, but he knows him by reputation, and that is the way that Yaakov is going to deal with him. Let us then examine a few of the incidents that take place. Probably the most prominent of these incidents is the one where he has worked for Lovon all these years, and now he says to him that he would like to take his leave. He's already spoken to Leo and to Rochel, and they've both agreed with him that it's time for him to go. But not only that, that it's time for him to go. So he goes to, he first of all goes to Lovon, and he says to him that it is time that he is able to gather some substance for himself. Lovon says, "What shall I give you?" And Yaakov says, "You don't really have to give me anything at all. But what I'm going to do is, I'm going to go through all your sheep and remove from there everyone of your flock that is striped and that is spotted and that is speckled, and everyone that is dark among the sheep and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and they shall be, that will be my payment." Now Lovon jumps at that. He says, "Hein lu yehichi borecho." Excellent. Let it be as you say. So quite obviously, there are not very many of spotted and speckled and striped sheep in the flock. So he agrees with it immediately. So far, it's so good. Then comes something very strange. So Yaakov takes these sheep, and he puts them all together separately from Lovon. And he says to Lovon, "Now, if you find amongst my sheep any that are white, then you know that it's stolen. So you've got an easy check on what I have, and you know that I haven't stolen anything from you." And then, of course, it says, "And Yaakov took moist sticks of poplar and almond and plane trees, and he peeled them in such a way that there was the bark, and then the part that was peeled, the bark, and that part that was peeled. And he took these sticks and he placed them over the troughs where the sheep came to drink. And these sheep were able to look at these sticks, and then when they produced their sheep with their lambs, all the lambs were spotted and speckled and striped, and these were now his sheep." Really, that doesn't happen. This is scientifically untrue. It just doesn't happen. So how did it happen that it was like that? That was God's hashgacha. That was God's providence. That was the nace. That was the miracle. But we've got amongst the very many principles to which I draw your attention from time to time, there is one principle, lahaktiv es hanes, that one does everything one can to reduce the miracle. And the Ramban asks the famous question about the ark. All the measurements are given of the ark. And then he tells us that the animals that went into the ark, well, it's impossible for the ark to keep all those animals. It's impossible for the ark to have the food for all those animals. So it was all by a miracle. So the Ramban asks, if it was all by a miracle, what do you need such a big ark at all? Have a very small one. If it's by a miracle, you don't need it. And he answers, Lahaktin Yesanei. There is news in everything. There is something coarse about exploiting a situation where one knows it is going to be miraculous and one emphasizes the miracle of it. And so he makes an ark. It's a big ark, takes him a long time to build. In this case, Yaakov does it with a peel. And there's another explanation, but that's not important at the moment. The question is, does he do this secretly, or is Lavan aware of it? No question that Lavan is aware of it. Doesn't do it secretly. And you can be quite sure Lavan is watching him all the time. And you can be quite sure that Laban's sons are watching him all the time. Doesn't do it secretly, and this happens. Now we've got another very interesting thing, and that is afterwards when he speaks, when Yaakov speaks to Leah and to Rachel, and he wants to leave and explains to them why he wants to leave. He says, "Va'avichi neisel bi vehechli es maskuti." I say this morning, your father deceived me and changed the arrangement for my wages. It works out 100 times. 10 times, 10 times. Monim is 10 times. Changed it 100 times. When he saw that they were speckled, he said, no, it must be striped. We'll change it to striped. Then when it was striped, he said, no, we want our kuli, we want it around the feet that there should be rings. Then it can only be yours. The next lot of bands that came had rings around their feet. So he tried, he changed it every time he changed it. And he couldn't believe that this was a miracle. He thought there was something that Yaakov was doing. In the end, he's got to accept it. Now, what is it that Yaakov is doing here? And he does things, we shall soon see that he does other things also. What is it that he is actually doing here? He is working on this principle, and we've got it also in the book of Psalms. It's twice in the Tanakh, once in the book of Shmuel, once in the book of Psalms. And he says, Im chositis chasod im devar, Im gvar tomim titamon, Im novor tis boror, Im ikesh tis pator. And the English translation is a good translation here. And he says, Hashem repaid me in accordance with my righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands before his eyes. With a devout, you act devoutly. With a wholehearted man, you act wholeheartedly. With the pure, you act purely. And with the crooked, you act perversely. So he's following this, and he's acting perversely with Lavan. He knows that Lavan is not going to let him get away with anything. He will deceive him to the bitter end. And so he acts with Lavan in the same way as Lavan would act with him. And that is what he told Rochel at the very beginning, when he says he's an och beramot, as far as his her father is concerned, he can be a brother of his with regard to deception. Now, but that doesn't really give us a good picture of who Yaakov Avinu was. He uses deception in order to get what he wants. Is that the idea of Lo Leches Bidrochov? Now, David HaMelech says that that is the way Hashem deals with his people. If a person is devout, he deals with him devoutly. If he's wholehearted, he deals with him wholeheartedly. But if he is perverse and he is crooked, then Hashem deals with him in exactly the same way. Why does Hashem do that? Is it a tit for tat? That can't be. Hashem is chesed, consideration and kindness for his children in every way. The reason Hashem deals perversely with the crooked and with the perverted is because that's the only way you can teach him. So this is teaching the crooked and the perverse, and the only way one can do it is by teaching them in the language and they understand, and paying them in their own coin. There is the din in the Torah. It's one of the 613 mitzvahs that we are expected, in fact it is demanded of us, to walk in the ways of God. In the Torah, from time to time, we see what are the ways of God. There is justice, there is compassion, there is tolerance, erech apayim. And these are the qualities, these are the attributes which we must practice in our dealings with our fellow beings, because those are the attributes which Hashem uses in his dealings with us. And so, really what it amounts to is, Yaakov is using this method, and his purpose is to teach Laban. That is the only way he can teach him. Now, he emerges quite a different person when one works it on that principle. But let us go a little bit further. When he is ready to go, we are told that Hashem says to Yaakov, return to the land of your fathers and to your birthplace, and Hashem says, I will be with you. So Yaakov sends for Rochel and for Leah, and they go out into the field where nobody can hear them, and then Yaakov says to his wives, I've seen the face of your father, it's not towards me as it was yesterday and the day before. He says, nevertheless, the God of my father has been with me, and you know that with all my strength I have served your father. And your father has deceived me and changed my hirat 100 times, but God suffered him not to do me evil. If he said thus, the speckled shall be thy hire, then all the flocks here be more speckled. And if he says, the striped shall be your hire, then all the flocks bore striped. Thus God had delivered the cattle of your father and given them to me. And and he goes on to say that an angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, Yaakov, lift up now your eyes and see all the rams which go to the flocks are striped, are speckled, are grizzled, for I have seen all that Lovan does to you. I am the God of Basay, where thou anointest the pillar. Now arise, go out from the land, and return to the land of your kindred. And Rochel and Leah answered and said to him, is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not sought aliens by him, for he hath sold us, and hath also altogether eaten our money? For all the riches which God hath delivered from our father, that is ours and our children's, now then, whatsoever God hath said to you, do. And Jacob rose, lifted up his sons and his wife upon the camels, and he led away all his cattle, all his substance which he had gotten, the cattle of his property which he had gotten from Paddan Aram, to come to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. And then it goes on to say, he goes out, he flees, doesn't tell Laban anything, and Yaakov, the words that are used now are significant. By Yiglov Yaakov es Lev Lovan Arami. And Yaakov stole the heart of Lovan the Syrian. In that, none told him that he fled. Nobody told him anything. By Yivrahu v'chol ha-shelo, and Yaakov and everything that he had fled. And he arose and he crossed the river and he set his face in the direction of Har Gilad. And then on the third day, when it was told to Laban that Yaakov had fled, then he takes his men with him and he pursues him. And Hashem comes to Laban in a dream and tells him, don't touch Yaakov, be very careful of him. And eventually he catches up to with him, and then he puts before him his complaint. He says, Me on Tiso Vatignov Eslo Vivovi. What have you done? You've stolen my heart. But that means you've deceived me. But the Nahegis Venosai Kishvuyas Chore. You have led away my daughters as if they were captives. That's the first thing that he complains to him. Lomo nachbeislo livroach vatignovasi. Why have you hidden the fact that you were fleeing and you deceived me? The Lord got it to me and you didn't tell me. Had you told me, I would have sent you away the same hall that you need the silver with you know. I would have given you a farewell reception. You would have gone in joy. You would have gone with song. So that's the second thing. And the third thing is, you didn't give me the chance to kiss my sons and my daughters, meaning his daughters and his grandchildren. I told his culture herself, you know, you haven't done very wisely. So what is his complaint? He said, you know, what do you, how do you think I am looked upon by the people who live in my town? My daughters go away. That's no covet for me. The second thing is this, I would have sent you away with joy. You've robbed me of simcha, you've robbed me of joy. And the third thing is, there's such a thing as love of a father to his children. You've even robbed me of that. Said, you haven't done really very well. You've done foolishly. I could do you a lot of harm, but Hashem told me that I mustn't do you any harm. He says, now, I know that you want to go, you're yearning for your father's house. I can understand that. And then he accuses him of having taken something, having taken his idols. We don't want to go into that tonight. And then Yaakov answers him. And he says, what harm have I done you? You found here nothing that belongs to you. And he goes on and he says, they eventually make a covenant between them. And he says to him, I didn't tell you because I was afraid. And I told you that you would have withheld your daughters from me. You would have kept them back. And he uses a very strong expression. You would have kept them back and you wouldn't have allowed me to go. Then we've got the sequel to it all, that they come together and Yaakov says to him, Im ta'ane es benesai bim tikach noshim abenesai. He makes a covenant with him that Yaakov will in no way deal badly, maltreat his daughters, and he won't take any additional wives. Then he goes on, and Yaakov agrees to it, and they sit down, and they offer up a sacrifice, and they eat, and they've now made a covenant between them. And that is the end of the whole story. Now, taking it on the basis that I've explained to you, that the whole idea is one of teaching. What would have happened had Yaakov told him that he was going? We know the truth, and Yaakov told you the truth, that he would never have allowed him to go. Look at the disgrace that there would have been, the fight amongst them. Now Yaakov had a tremendous amount of physical strength. When all the shepherds had to come together in order to remove the stone, Yaakov was able to remove the stone on his own. Yaakov's sons had a tremendous strength. When Shechem had the incident with his daughter Dinah, two of the sons went out and they just destroyed the whole city. They had tremendous strength. Look what would have happened had he told him that they were going to go. Look at the disgrace that he would have suffered then, that Laban would have suffered then. There would have been no kovod, there would have been no simcha, there would have been no avas bonov, he wouldn't have had the opportunity to say goodbye to his children. Now, afterwards, it turns out that when he pursues him, he's got all those things. They sit down, they make the covenant, he's got everything, he says goodbye to his children, he kisses his children, takes farewell of them. Everything is done, he gets covered, he gets simcha, everything is done in that. That is how it all turns out. Now, this is quite a different way from looking at the whole story of Yaakov. And it's on the basis that when we've got a person like Yaakov, with all that greatness, there must be something far more significant to the way he deals with the Laban than only a case of Rabbalus. That the righteous is able, is permitted, to use deception to deal with a rogue, doesn't sound right. Accepting if it is in order to teach him, and that is the only way you can teach him. But of now comes the great reservation. That is permitted only if it's done for no other reason than teaching the other person. If it is done with any idea of revenge or any satisfaction, look what he did to me, I'll do it to him. He did this to me, I won't give him the chance. That is not the idea. The idea is only one of teaching. That is the obligation that he has. Lo leches bidruchov, to walk in God's way. And so we've got the story of how Yaakov behaves towards Laban. And that is the lesson that we are able to learn from it. That if one has a perverse person, and the only way you can teach him is in his a language that he himself understands, then one employs those means in order to teach it. But the condition must always be, it is no revenge. The idea is only in order to help him. If there are any questions you wish to ask me, you can ask me those questions now. Yes, Alan.
Would you be permitted to do it, even if you knew the person wouldn't learn the lesson?
That is something you can never know.
Well, I was
thinking of the example. Shlomo HaMelech says in Mishlei, when a wicked man is dead, then there is no hope for him. Which means that as long as he's alive, there's hope. We only say when a wicked man is dead, then you can't do anything more with him. As long as he's alive, you can never tell. You don't know.
Well, we're commanded to be with a chaver. But we learn only if we know the person will hear what we have to say. And I was wondering if the same caveat was appropriate here.
To a certain extent, yes. To a certain extent, yes. I mean, if you know for certain it's not going to be, but you can't know. It is something that you can't know. It's not altogether why I write you what you say about giving a permission to another person. Because even if you're supposed to go chiach to chiach, there is an infinitive and a finite verb. The infinitive is to show, doesn't matter how many times you can tell it. The obligation is there. The only thing is there are restrictions. We are afraid that we don't know how to be mochiach. We haven't got the art. We are not on that level that we can admonish another person, so we are very afraid of it. That is for quite a different reason. But the din is to admonish the person as much all the time. And still we do it if somebody has harmed us. The correct thing is to go to the person to chat with him about it. It's true, there are people that you can't chat with them about, but you try your best. Try. Yes.
I'm not really clear in what way we know Levon learned from it. He said he was able to say goodbye to his children and they go through blood bath, or something, but how do we know he learned from it?
What we do know is that Yaakov saved him disgrace, saved him a lot of anguish by doing it the way he did. Yaakov knew had he told him he was going, he wouldn't have allowed him to go. There would have been a fight. What a bad impression it would have made.
Did he learn from it?
I don't know. I don't know how much he learned from it. But that's the loss we hear of Lava.
So we should...
Well, the lesson that we draw from it is that, A, we are allowed to do it that way, provided it is to teach. And the second thing is we do everything we can to avoid any person suffering disgrace, even if it is to our disadvantage the way we do it. That is what we learn from it. Dr. Moore?
In the beginning of the year, that Hashem, the way that he deals with people, that with a righteous person he deals righteously, and with a perverse person he deals perversely.
Yes.
Are we to emulate Hashem's way?
Yes. That's what the Yaakov Avinu does. But I've made the reservation. That is only if I'm certain I'm not getting a lot of satisfaction for myself out of it. This is not a question of revenge. I'm doing it only for the benefit of that person. I'm dealing with him like that only for his benefit. You follow? Father scolds the child. He's doing it only for the child's benefit. A father, if it's necessary, smacks the child only for the benefit of the child. If the father does it to vent his anger, it's very bad. That is reprehensible and it's inexcusable. But if he does it only for that purpose, fine. It is.
What do we learn from the fact that given all of this, Hashem still had enough reservation to impose the additional admonition, you must not hurt him? Is this to say that you would think that was apparently an essential element to keep Laban behaving like you might have suspected him to behave under the circumstances, with force and with perversity?
Yes.
So, would you
want to address that? He went to harm him. Of course he went to harm him. But Hashem says to him, don't touch him. That is to help Yaakov.
Okay, but it says that there was no implication that Laban was really going to learn his lesson, that he shouldn't.
But he didn't. But he didn't. He did. He didn't. He didn't do anything he said.
Because Hashem said, you better not.
Of course, what worries me is something quite different. Laban is the rogue. Hashem speaks to him. Hashem doesn't speak to me. So where do I stand in all
this? You're not a rogue.
I don't know. That is what worries me. But that is something very personal. Yes, sir.
Why does Laban agree to a covenant? What is the purpose of that?
It's possible that there he's learned his lesson. You can't fight and join them. He's learned his lesson. So the end of it, this whole Sedra has got no break in it. It isn't divided into paragraphs. The chapters are not our divisions. The Goyim did the chapters. It's not divided. It starts, there's no break in the whole chapter. It's all one thing leading to another. It's all just one whole piece. From the beginning to the end. The subject is Yaakov. It ends happily. And
somebody harmed me. So I'm supposed to go to that person and discuss it. And that person refuses to admit it. Cannot get through. What am I supposed to do?
Well, I think you can put the position in even a more unpleasant one. You go to a person to speak to him, he interprets it as a sign of weakness. Now he really has you. Now he's going to use that and he's going to go against you. Have you ever had that experience?
Probably.
I think we all have that experience. He interprets it as a sign of weakness. He doesn't interpret this that you are doing it for his good.
So then,
can't do anything about it. Keep away from him. You might have to deal with him very strongly.
But it's a question of one's protection.
It's a question of one's protection. That's another thing. I am not only entitled to protect myself, it is demanded of me that I must protect myself. No question about it that I've got to protect myself. But here there is quite a different question.
Yeah, that's different from revenge.
Now, protecting oneself is no revenge. Revenge, one is not allowed to take revenge. Protection, yes. I'm allowed to take protection. I've got to protect myself from any harm that can. Reb Simcha Zissel said, they asked him, is he afraid of people? Is he afraid of anybody? He says, yes, of course he's afraid. He said, but God is always looking after you. He said, yes, but that person has got free determination of will. He said, he can do me a lot of harm. He said, of course I'm afraid. And of course he takes precautions. That one has to do. But here, to be able to do that, it's beyond us. To act along like that, along those lines, is beyond us. But there are certain points, you see, when he flees, and he said, I was afraid you wouldn't allow my daughters to go with me. He could have managed that. He had tremendous strength. Starts off, the chapter starts off with the shepherds all have to roll the stone away. They haven't got the strength to do it. He's going to do it on his own. And the Midrash says to him, it was like removing a cork from a bottle. Quite a simple thing. Yet he didn't want to use that and work stuff like that. But protection, you've got to protect yourself.
Yes. You made the comment that Hashem deals with people in a wise manner. Person perverse, he deals with them in a perverse manner. If one keeps
you know, I didn't say that.
To the said, never people. Didn't know. Very good advice. if one finds that the same set of events keep occurring within
say
one...
To give him, sorry,
one
sorry.
Finds that the same set of events keep occurring within one's own life, can we assume that Hashem is dealing with us for some reason?
Very much so. Very much so. That is all part of the Buddha connected needle. And it is our duty to try and understand why what is happening to us is happening to us. Whether it's on the personal level, on the individual level, whether it's on the communal level, whether it's on the national level, whether it's on the world level. So there's a tremendous amount of alienation in the world. People can't be bothered about other people. So we've got a recession. A recession, it hits everybody, that's a proper recession. Hits everybody, people begin to think of others. And God forbid, if it goes into a depression. I still remember the last depression. When it goes to depression, then people help each other. Then people help each other. But when we say bidui, we say kishinu olef. Kishinu olef is that we confess that we haven't been doing that. Something goes wrong with us. What is the reason for it? But there's a corollary to that. If something goes well with us, we must also ask the same question. I think I told you the story where I had a Talmid in Johannesburg. He was just one of these people who had everything. He had a wonderful mind. He had very good looks. Very successful in his studies. Hardly did any work, had a very good time. Everyone buddy wanted to be his friend, and he just rode roughshod over everybody. His mother and his father were outstanding people. His mother was a very beautiful young woman. Suddenly she died. And he came to see me. And he said, why should it happen? Why should this have happened to me? And I did something which I've only done once in my life. I hit a person when he was down. And I said to him, you come now and ask why this tragedy should have happened to you. You should have come to me all this time that everything was going your way. You're asking me now, where is there a God if that could have happened to me? You should have said, where is there a God if everything went your way and you were such a miserable creature? You didn't care about anybody in the world, only about yourself. That is the time you should have come to ask me, not now. The sequel of it was that he became closer to me than he was ever before. Eventually he went away to Israel, he married a girl, and he brought her out to South Africa, came to see me with this girl, and asked if he could come into my study together with his wife. He came into my study and he said to her in my presence, "You know, I told you what happened here. This is where it happened." And he told her the whole story. And that's the only time I've ever done it in my life. But even when things go good, we've got to ask ourselves and examine them. Why is it going this way? In fact, that is the real time to ask the question. Any other questions?
One more. Is there? Can you take part of this lesson and go back to Yaakov's relationship with his brother Esau at the time of the son of the first bride? Was there an element of this?
No.
The narrative?
No. But there's another element that starts off with this week's center. You know, he goes to meet his brother. He takes every precaution, but he gives him tremendous cover. Gives him tremendous cover. Now that cover is not false. He's doing two things. And they are perfectly consistent. He takes every precaution. And on the other hand, he gives him every honor. But that honor is not false. That honor is not chalifo, it's not flattery. Flattery is a very serious misdemeanor. Wouldn't be guilty of that. Honor, he gives him honor because that's what he deserves. He's his brother, he's an elder brother, he's got to give him that honor. Same time, he protects himself. At the beginning of the next sentra, beginning of the next story.
We're supposed to be meeting next, in 2 weeks, but that's Hanukkah. So Ralph suggested we not meet on Hanukkah. That would be a month, which would be about December the 16th. So, Rob, is there any...
Is December the 16th of Monday?
Yes. Monday night.
You would know.
It comes in
that day. Yes, I know.
No,
is it the Monday?
The
Monday.
December 15th
is
a Monday.
16th is a Monday.
So is September 15th all right,
Rob? Is it 15th or 16th?
December the 16th is Monday.
December the 16th.
December the 16th. Whichever it is, if that's hard to figure out, that's when we'll meet again. And we want to thank Maurice's wife, Mildred, for sending over popcorn. Gently, feel free to come in and help yourself to refresh.
Betty, before the end there, just add something. I've told you that there were four great schools of Musar. The great schools were Kelem, Kabotka, Navaradok, and Terush. Those were four schools of Musar. Anything, any other of the schools of Musar were really the parts of those. There might have been slight differences, but they were parts of those four schools. The approach that I've taken tonight, that is Slobodka. That is Slobodka Musar. That belongs to the school of Slobodka.
Would it be different from another school?
Dealing with the same subject?
Yes.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. It would have been a bit different. But that was the stress that should have been stressed, you see. This was a lot of this was made in Slobodka. Now I was just fortunate that my chavrusa in Teresh was the son of the exponent of Slobodka Musar. So I got quite a lot of it in the Muslim. Okay. But that is a Slobodka approach.